To Never Found, Never Forgotten. I'm your host, Melanie, and the story I have for you this week is so bizarre and will leave you with more questions than answers. 12-year-old Johnny Gosch woke up at 5:45 a.m. on the morning of September 5th, 1982, to start his day delivering newspapers. And Johnny would normally walk his route with the newspapers in a red wagon. He would normally wake up, bundle his newspapers, they would like wrap them with rubber bands, and he'd put them in the red wagon. And typically Johnny's dad would accompany him. But on this morning, Johnny didn't wake his dad up to join him. In fact, it seems that Johnny was trying to gain a little independence. And just the day before, Johnny had asked to do his paper route alone, but his parents didn't think it was a good idea. But on that morning, Johnny left without waking his dad. And he took his little dachshund, Gretchen, with him. About 7 a.m., customers along Johnny's route start calling the Gosch home, wondering where their morning papers are. And Johnny has never been late. He's never missed a day delivering papers. He's taken his job very seriously because he's been saving up for a dirt bike. And so his parents just assume that he's overslept. And they go and they check his room. And they realize he's gone. His mom, Noreen, calls the police, and his dad finishes the paper route. And some people question this. They think it's weird that his son is missing, yet John decided to finish the paper route. But I think there can be a couple of explanations for this. First, by finishing the route, customers will stop calling the house to report their newspapers not being delivered, which will keep the phone line free. So this was the 80s. They only had one phone. You know, it's a landline phone, of course. So all these people calling the house to say that their newspapers aren't there is tying up the phone line. So by finishing the route, it's going to stop people from calling the house. This might keep the phone line free for police and, you know, ransom calls, that sort of thing. And also, it will allow John to walk Johnny's route and see for himself that if there's anything amiss. And John does find Johnny's red wagon with the newspapers inside about two blocks from his home. And in the meantime, Gretchen, Johnny's dog, returns home alone. It takes police a while to arrive at the home, despite the station being only about 10 blocks away. And Noreen and John feel like instantly the police have already assumed Johnny is a runaway and they're not taking them seriously. However, there are immediately some leads. A neighbor, a man named John Rossi, saw Johnny giving directions to a man in a car, a blue car with Nebraska license plates. And when Johnny asked Mr. Rossi if he could help with the directions, the car did a U-turn and sped out of the neighborhood, which is totally suspicious. And a couple of the neighborhood paper boys would gather together to rubber band those newspapers together. And so there were a couple of other boys nearby, and Johnny told them that this man in the blue car creeped him out. And apparently he told them that the driver had at one point shut off the engine of his car, opened the door, and like swung his feet out like he was going to get out of the car. But then Mr. Rossi came by and he got back into his car. But when he did, he flicked his dome light three times. And at that time, one of the other boys saw a man walk out from between some houses. And Noreen, Johnny's mom, believes that the man in the car signaled to the other man who came from between the houses by flicking that dome light somehow. And Noreen believes it was the second man who abducted Johnny. Despite this, the attitude of the police department was that Johnny will turn up, according to the family. But Lieutenant Jeff Miller said that an extensive search was immediately conducted. They called in state troopers, detectives, Polk County sheriffs, deputies, they were all called in to help canvass the neighborhood and do door-to-door searches, like ask questions of people. However, about 20 volunteers had gathered at a local park to start a search, and they were told by the chief of police to leave and go home because Johnny was a runaway. The chief was later, he later resigned due to other allegations, but Noreen expressed her frustration with the police from the very beginning. And Noreen and John were even prevented from hanging missing persons posters at a fair in 1983 because it might depress visitors. Noreen and John ended up hiring a private investigator to help locate their son, and Noreen fully believes that Johnny was kidnapped and sold into a pedophile prostitution ring. She testified during a 1999 crime organization trial in Nebraska that Johnny had visited her in the middle of the night in March of 1997, and she said he was with another male, and he stayed for about an hour. And Noreen claims that Johnny told her that he had been abducted by members of this pedophile crime ring and he had escaped, but he was keeping a low profile to avoid repercussions and that he would have no further contact with her to avoid any repercussions to her or the family. I should say that that has never been substantiated, I guess. In 1999, another man who was a witness in an embezzlement trial claimed that he had participated in Johnny's abduction, and he claimed that he himself was a victim of this childhood pedophile ring. However, when police investigated the man's claims, he was in Omaha, Nebraska when Johnny disappeared, so he couldn't have participated. In 2006, Noreen told the press that she had found photos left on her front door that showed images of three boys who were found bound and gagged. One of the boys, she said, resembled Johnny, and it's reported that other people connected to Johnny's disappearance also received copies of the photos, either delivered anonymously through deliveries like Noreen or via the internet. The report doesn't say like who these people were, whether they were investigators or family members. And while Noreen fully believes that one of the boys is Johnny, the police remain skeptical. A Florida police officer said that he had actually investigated those same photos back in the 70s. And he was able to identify the boys in the photos. And he learned that the photos were staged. The boys were photographed willingly. However, the Iowa Police Department has yet to confirm this, though they did say that they do believe that the photos are a cruel prank. In August of 1984, another newspaper carrier, 13-year-old Eugene Martin, also went missing from Des Moines, about 7 miles from where Johnny went missing. On the morning of August 12th, Jean was seen talking to a man between 5 a.m. and 5:15 a.m. as he was preparing his newspapers for delivery, and the man was described as being clean-cut and in his 30s. Like Johnny, Jean was usually accompanied by someone. He was usually accompanied by an older stepbrother. However, on this morning, he was alone. At about 7:15, his newspaper route manager called his family to say his newspaper sack hadn't been picked up. And about 15 minutes later, the manager called again to say that the newspapers were all still inside, so they hadn't been delivered either. And Eugene's dad immediately called the police. However, Jean was never heard from again. And the similarities between these two disappearances of Johnny Gosch and Eugene Martin are remarkable, and they cannot be discounted. Both were newspaper carriers, out early in the morning. Both of them were alone. Both were seen speaking to an unknown male shortly before their disappearance, and both have never been heard from again. A third boy, 13-year-old Mark Allen, also went missing in Des Moines on March 29th, 1986, after telling his mom he was going to walk down the street to a friend's house. However, Mark never made it to his friend's house. His mom didn't realize he was missing until the next morning when she called, and after she called to check in with friends and family, none of whom had seen Mark, she called the police. But police refused to investigate for 48 hours, convinced that he would just turn up on his own. Mark also had some behavioral issues, and while his mom said he was very intelligent and a good student, police initially believed he was a runaway. However, his case has been classified as a non-family abduction. His case has never been officially linked to Johnny Gosch or Eugene Martin, only in the fact that he was about the same age and missing from the same area. All three boys are described as Caucasian males. Johnny Gosch is described as being 5'7", weighing 140 pounds, with light brown hair and blue eyes and freckles. Eugene Martin is described as having brown hair, brown eyes, being about 5 foot tall and weighing 110 pounds. Mark Allen is described as being between 4'11" and 5 foot tall and weighing about 90 pounds. He had brown hair and blue eyes. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Johnny Gosch can contact the West Des Moines Police Department at 515-223-3211. And anyone with information on the disappearances of Eugene Martin or Mark Allen can contact the Des Moines Police Department at 515-283-4811 or 515-283-4864. That's my episode for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Again, you can find me on Facebook, Never Found, Never Forgotten Podcast. And you can also find me on Twitter, @PodNever, and interact with us there.